Hello, everyone, and welcome to the KC at the Movies podcast. Post Oscars, we are hours out from the ceremony, and welcome to another episode of the podcast talking about the awards season. So, sorry about that. The only reason we're doing these like awards season ones is they're just easier and quicker to put out. I promise you, I have actually recorded a real return to form episode. That I'll be releasing this week about Dune Part 2 in my IMAX with my experience with Dune Part 1 in IMAX and some other stuff that I've been checking out as well. But I wanted to wrap up this all awards season, bubble that this podcast has been trapped in at the moment and talk about the Oscars, give our post-mortem for the 96th Annual Academy Awards. We're going to go by play-by-play. And give my thoughts on the night. I overall thought it was a pretty good night. It was pretty decent. I thought there were some changes that were really nice. I thought there were some new things that I was like, what are they doing? They need to sort that out. And of course, there are some jokes from Jimmy Kimmel or, you know, there are some presenters that didn't gel too well. That, you know, that's always the case, really. It's always the case. But we did have some presenters that were, that gelled nicely. So we kicked off the night with Jimmy Kimmel's monologue, and look, I thought it was good. I thought it was, pretty safe. He can steer a clear ship, you know. He can clearly see the ship. Sorry, and I didn't like the some of the jokes that he made. I just thought they were not that funny. But the one I didn't really, some offense to, I guess, was him just lowballing Robert Downey Jr. about his drug use and everything. You can tell when it cuts to Robert as well, you could tell he wasn't really into that anymore as well. And it looked a bit uncomfortable. I could be wrong. I could be perceiving it differently. But it looked like he was a bit uncomfortable. So that didn't really sit well with me. And thank God the monologue didn't last too long. It didn't go for like 10 minutes or anything like that. It might have gone for 10 minutes. I'm not too sure. But it felt short to me. It felt short. We kicked off the evening with actress in a supporting role, and this is the first change that I noticed and that I really liked. I liked how they got past nominees from the years to give words about the nominee that they were given to talk about. You could tell that some were new, some people that were friends, but then you can also tell some were just like that's the first time they met them, and that maybe they didn't even see the film, but they were just saying nice things about them. Some of them were quite obvious. And some of them sounded very fairly genuine. But I liked this change. I thought it was really lovely. Instead of just seeing these clips, seeing their fellow peers talk about their talent and the reasons that they deserve this nomination. And when it comes to my tally, when it comes to my bet tally, I was 16 out of 20. Now, the only reason I put 20 here is because I don't count short documentary because I just never get around to watching them, so I don't really count them as the, I'm not saying that I don't count them as a ceremony, but I just don't get around to actually watching them, so they're always taken off my tally. So I ended up getting 16 out of 20 because there are a lot of upsets, a lot of good upsets in my opinion, but there are a lot of upsets in the in some of these categories. But one that wasn't an upset, one that was like a shoe-in, it was hers to lose, was Davi Jo Randolph for The Holdovers, winning her supporting role award. And she gave a great speech. She's been giving great speeches the whole awards circuit. And she gave another great, a very emotional, heartfelt, genuine speech for her award. And I thought she was great. She was my personal favorite out of those women to win that award. So I'm really glad because she's the heart of The Holdovers. So I'm really glad that Devine won that one. Not much really to say about that one. I just liked how they kept doing that. And then they stuck to that that active thing, like, you know, their peers talking really nice about them. They stuck with that for all of the acting categories, but, you know, we'll talk about the rest when we get to those. We then went to animated short. Now the favorite from a lot of people that I know and a lot of people that I follow was 95 Senses and maybe Letter to a Pig as well. But this ended up going to War Is Over, inspired by the music of John Lennon and Yoko Ono. And I think this was the safe bet. I think a lot of people agreed that this was the safe bet. This is the only one as well that you can't really watch as well. I don't think it's you can even see it at the moment. Whereas the other shorts are readily available to you and you can actually view. So, and when I looked at the nominees as well, it looked like the most boring one. I don't want to be too harsh, but it looked like the most boring one. 95 Senses looked actually the most interesting. So did A Letter to a Pig. But yeah, it went to the John Yoko. And then that's the first time we heard it was UK Mother's Day. And we were hearing that for a lot of the night as well, considering the winners. So yeah, that went to The War Is Over. And then we went to Animated Feature Film. And this is where I thought we were going to get a... This is where I thought we could get an upset. And we did. Not saying that this film did not deserve the award. But it ended up going to The Boy and the Heron from Hayao Miyazaki and not Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which was on my ballot. I had Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse certainly winning, but I knew that The Boy and the Heron was in for an upset, and it did. And like I said, I'm not saying that it didn't deserve it. I just didn't vibe with the film personally. I didn't think it was that great, but... a lot of people did, and that's why it won. I would have just loved. I just think I've never seen anything in animation quite like Spider-Verse. Whereas I honestly thought that Hayao Miyazaki was just playing the greatest hits with The Boy and the Heron. Again, that's just me. It's a little bit harsh, but that's just how I felt about that movie. So yeah, that went to The Boy and the Heron. Hayao wasn't even there to accept it. I assume he's busy or he's got, you know, he's in Japan. So, you know, he's got a lot of stuff on. But so the presenters for that one, I think that was Chris Hemsworth and Anya Taylor-Joy. They ended up taking that on his behalf. And then we moved on to original screenplay, the writing categories. So we started with original screenplay, and this, rightfully so, did go to Anatomy of Fall. I recently watched Anatomy of Fall on the weekend as well before the ceremony, just so I could be up to date with the Best Picture winners. I also realized that I thought I had watched, for nominees, I mean, I thought I watched all of the Best Picture nominees, and I kept forgetting that I have not seen Maestro yet. I have not seen it yet, so I haven't seen all of the Best Picture nominees, and I really try to get around every year to see the Best Picture nominees, and I hadn't seen Maestro, if I can say it. I hadn't even crossed my mind that I had watched it. That's how much attention it was getting in my brain. So yeah, this rightfully so went to Anatomy of Fall, and like I said, I did watch it on the weekend. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was terrific. I thought it was an excellent, excellent movie. Justin Trier, she made such a interesting film because all of the things... all the directive choices that she made with that movie. And I recognized why she was finally in, you know, I finally recognized why she was in the directing category. I was like, okay, she made a good movie, but then I actually watched the movie and, you know, had an opinion and, saw what she was able to do with that film. So, this is not an Anatomy of Fall review, by the way. I'll talk about that and, maybe another podcast or maybe a Everything I Watch video, but, yeah, it took home the Oscar, and of course they showed the argument scene, which is I thought they would show the argument scene, they did. And look, to be fair, it's a good argument. It's a good argument. And it was great to see Justine up there. She had a great speech as well. She was very taken aback. She was very emotional. And yeah, well-deserved. Well-deserved for that one. And then adapted screenplay went to American Fiction, which I am not mad about. I like American Fiction. I can't really say much about the adaptation because I haven't read Erasure, but yeah, I thought this was going to go to Oppenheimer because I think my favorite was Oppenheimer. I said American Fiction. Okay. Maybe my personal pick was Oppenheimer and then I went with American Fiction for the actual ballot. Yeah, I think my personal pick was Oppenheimer, just the way that Christopher Nolan had actually wrote that script in first person, all in first person. And I mean, the other thing I was thinking about was Killers of the Flower Moon, but Killers of the Flower Moon wasn't even fucking nominated for adapted screenplay. So I was wrong about that. But yeah, American Fiction took that. I liked Cord Jefferson's speech about Hollywood, instead of making a lot of blockbusters, should make, I think it was 20 $10 million movies. I thought that was a great push for independent film and more original movies. So, and that really pushed on the narrative as well of the night of supporting original film. And a lot of original films winning these big awards, like Oppenheimer, like Poor Things. And you can say, look, that is an adaptation from American Prometheus, but the way that Nolan constructed that movie, it's so singular. It's such a Nolan adaptation. So that's why I'm saying it's original. So yeah, American Fiction took home adapted screenplay. We moved on to makeup and hairstyling next. And I'm trying to think who presented that one. Who was that? Was that one that was started being Issa Rae? No, they did production design and costume, I'm pretty sure. Or did they do short or documentary? I'm not too sure. No, I think they did makeup and hairstyle and then production design. This one was a bit of an upset for me as well. I really had this as Maestro. Maestro was the favorite for Bradley Cooper's nose. But this, rightfully so, another upset, went to Poor Things. I was loving that. I'm in complete agreement with Poor Things getting. Poor Things was my favorite to get, my personal favorite to get makeup and hairstyling. It's the one I was rooting for, and then actually won makeup and hairstyling. So that was one of the first awards of the night where I was like, yes, that actually went to the one that, like, I didn't have on the ballot, but that I'm really happy that won. We move on to production design. And this one I thought was going to go to Barbie. I had Barbie for the ballot for this one, but then I had Poor Things for costume. But then Poor Things ended up taking both of the awards home, both production design and costume design. And by the way, before we get into costume design, look at these awards. John Cena coming out. I thought that gag was good. For the Jimmy gags of the night, I thought the John Cena gag was really good. I thought it hit well. I love John Cena's commitment to his comedic bits and his comedic timing. He is one of those. He's one of those that WWE actors that doesn't take himself too seriously and actually has fun with what he's doing. Not everything has to be, you know, so serious and pushing brands or anything like that. Just having fun, you know, just having fun, and you know, not afraid to put himself out there, honestly. And yeah, I love that. I love that little gag before costume design. I thought it was very funny. And Poor Things took that one as well. So they took production design and costume design. Both of the artistic categories went to Poor Things. And as it should, production design is incredible. Everything about that movie is so unique and so beautiful and so, just so, again, a singular vision from Yorgos Lanthimos. And that's what they did. They thanked Yorgos for being so daring and artistic and being so confident in what he wanted for that film. So, yeah, it was great to see that. Great to see Poor Things squeak those artistic categories. We then went to international feature film. This was another one that I had a full-on lock-in, and I knew it was going to go to Zone of Interest, which I also did watch last week, finally. I have a lot of things to say about that movie, so I'll save it for another thing. But also did I end up seeing Perfect Days. I tried to watch The Teacher's Lounge as well. I didn't have time to watch Society of the Snow because I think it was like 2.5 hours. But I tried to watch Teacher's Lounge as well, but I couldn't find it anywhere. I couldn't see it anywhere. So I didn't end up watching that, but I did catch Perfect Days and absolutely love that movie as well. I have some things to say about that one as well because that hit me pretty personally, Perfect Days. But yeah, this went to the Zone of Interest, and I loved Jonathan Glazer's speech. When I came out of the Zone of Interest, when I was talking to my friend, when we came out of that, we were talking about how the film represents what we're going through nowadays, like today, with, you know, the conflict between Israel and Palestine, and Jonathan Glazer brought it up. He brought it up and said, yep, this is about that. And, you know, living in a, I forget what his actual exact words were, and I don't want to butcher them, but what he said was, I thought, very poignant and very urgent. And I loved it. I love the Zone of Interest so much. You'll be hearing about my thoughts about the Zone of Interest very soon, I hope. It may be popping up in a video. Just not to tease that list video, but it might be popping up in there. Then we moved on to actor and supporting role. And this one went to another lock for the Knights, Robert Downey Jr. And he had a great speech about his wife being his veterinarian, how he thanked his terrible childhood, his spoilist. You know, he's very charming. He put on a great speech. He was always going to put on a great speech. And I thought it was well deserved. My personal favorite, like I said in those picks podcasts that I did a while ago, was Robert De Niro or Mark Ruffalo before him. But it was great to see Robert get this. It's more of like a kind of like an honor run legacy award. So, finally giving RDJ the recognition that man deserves as an actor. Then we moved on to visual effects. And usually, if I'm not mistaken, visual effects is done first. But we did visual effects. It was right in the middle. And this went to Godzilla Minus One, the crew behind Godzilla Minus One. I don't know. At some moment, I really thought it was going to go to like the creator. I was like, maybe they'd just do an upset here. But I was like, surely they will not do this. Especially after the reaction video of the crew behind Godzilla Minus One reacting to their nomination went viral and everyone saw that. Like, you've got to love that. They got up there. I loved how they had all their little Godzilla statues. And then one of them was a gold one. And then he was wondering if he should keep the Oscar or the Golden Godzilla. And I thought that was... I got a good chuckle out of that. What was unfortunate, though, was... They're going to speak in Japanese. He's trying to speak in English. I thought we could have got, like, maybe a translator up there. Like, Bong had one during his... time at the Oscars when Parasite won. There was no translator up there. He was trying to do the whole speech in English. You can understand it's very difficult. I thought it was very rude how they're playing him off. Like he was just trying to finish his speech. I just don't understand that. Like, you know, do they have any sympathy for these people? Like, you know, I know they're trying to run a show. They're trying to get the show moving. But you could really see that he was having a difficult time there doing his speech in a language he doesn't really speak primarily in a country where he doesn't come from. So I thought they could have given him a little bit more leeway just to get his to get through his speech and thank all the people he wanted to thank. I don't think they even got to fit everyone in anyway as well. That rightfully went to Godzilla Minus One. That movie's fucking phenomenal. I can't wait to own that movie on 4K. And hopefully we get the Minus Color version on 4K in Australia. Fingers crossed. You can only hope. So, yeah. Then we went to film editing. And this is another one. I had Oppenheimer 4. This is when the Oppen sweep started. I'm pretty sure we had like little awards in between, but the Oppen sweep was coming. It was coming in hard, and it was not going to be stopped. So yeah, this went to Jennifer Lame, who I think she has worked with Chris since Tenet, and she did such a great job editing Oppenheimer, not just to keep it to a 3-hour runtime, but just the cuts that she made, the choices that she made, I thought were very artistic. And that's what I really liked about Oppenheimer as well, about how it wasn't just like this nonsensical, not a bat against Chris Nolan films, maybe a little bit, but, you know, this epic thing, and don't get me wrong, it's an epic movie, but it really felt more artistic in the way of Christopher Nolan. So I thought she did a bang-up job putting that film together, and... I thought she looked great. She had a great speech. And very well-deserved win for film editing. Then we moved on to documentary short. This is when I'm trying to think. Oh, one more thing I want to say about editing as well. Over the years, I was looking at, sorry, not over the years, recently I was looking at clips of how the Oscars have changed in terms of their presentation, in terms of their show. I think we've been pretty rocky after the pandemic in terms of the presentation, but in terms of the creativity behind certain things and how certain things are showing during the ceremony. And it used to be pretty artistic. I especially was looking at the screenwriting presentations, like the nominees for a screenwriting, and then it has like the script next to the film, or you can see the actor, or like the words of the page come into the page. There were some great years where we had some pretty cool ways of showing that. And I'm happy to say that that kind of did return with the writing categories. Like, we saw the scripts right next to the scene, which is really good. And film editing had the cuts in the film, which I thought was great. The frames of the film. And I thought that was a great way of doing the editing with the lighting as well and the sequence of everything. I thought it was a great way of doing editing. And I thought there was a lot of choices throughout the ceremony that felt more creative, that felt more artistic. Like, we're putting on a ceremony to thank and honor people in a creative industry. So why not get creative with it? So it was great to see some risks being taken and see some deliberate creative choices made throughout the ceremony. We went to documentary short. This one went to the Last Repair Shop. And I think for this one, what did I have for this one? I can't. Oh, there it is. No, it's over here. For this one, I had Henry Sugar. And no. What? Live Oak, this is not, sorry. Jesus. Documentary short. Actually, no, this one I didn't have as well because I didn't watch them. Feature I did get around to. Short, that went to the Last Repair Shop. And I liked the guy's speech. I liked how he said he was inspired by John Williams. He went to the same public schools as him. That 12-year-old girl, I forget her name, but she got a good spotlight. I loved the camera remained on her as she walked to the stage. I thought it was a great way of, showing that, giving people like that a spotlight, giving the next generation a spotlight. And I thought it was lovely. And then feature went to 20 Days in Mariupol. And I really thought this was going to go to, could have went to, American Symphony or Bobby Wine. But this went to 20 Days in Mariupol, and this is the only documentary I think I did see out of these, but I still put it down because I was very confident that 20 Days would win based on what the subject matter is. And lo and behold, it did win. We got a really great speech from the filmmaker behind that. I really liked the sentiment behind him. It's a very heartbreaking sentiment that he wished he could withdraw this award or give it back because this is a film that he shouldn't have had, shouldn't have made. He wishes he didn't had to make this movie, but to get the message out there, to get people in people's heads, this is what you have to do. You have to bring a hammer. When it comes to documentaries, I think this is what you do. Great speech from that person, and I thought it was a very, very moving speech. Very moving speech. One of the ones that really stood out to me on the night. Before we get into cinematography, there's something I do want to bring up, and it was the presenters. Now, some of them weren't really meshed well. I thought Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy's, that was a train wreck. I did like Issa Rae's and Rami Yusuf when they're talking about editing. I thought that was, short, my bad, when they're talking about short. I thought that was very funny. I didn't want to keep it short. But the big winners to me, the big ones that really stood out to me, who I thought really bounced off each other really well, was Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. I thought they were hilarious, putting the rivalry of Barbenheimer behind them, and just their chemistry was great. I thought the chemistry was great. I'm really excited to see the Fall Guy now, based off their chemistry. I mean, look, I was always in for that movie, considering it's a David Leitch film with Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, but I'm more excited, I'd say, for that movie now, based off the chemistry that they so clearly have. But this moment here is I really want to talk about this moment, because what they did was they honored all of the people doing stunts in film in all of their movies, and we looked at a montage of clips of over the years people doing stunts, and especially from last year, people pulling off stunts, and then they just said thanks to the stunt team. Thanks, guys. Thanks for helping us. I thought this was the perfect opportunity to, because, you know, casting was announced as an Oscar. I think it'll be part of the next one, I'm pretty sure. And look, that is a great award to add to everything. But one award that people have been pushing for, that I myself have been pushing for years, is stunts. Is stunt choreography, stunt coordinator, just best stunts in general. And, you know, you could just call it best stunts, and then you honor the whole team. I thought it was a golden opportunity to have this really arousing speech, really, sorry, not arousing. I mean, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt on stage, but yeah. really rousing speech about stunts and how important stunts are and how much we appreciate stunts in movies and the risk that they take to help us bring these movies to life, to bring these action sequences to life and make them so riveting and exhilarating. And then at the end go, and we also like to, so because of all this, we would like to announce that there is going to be now a category for best stunts at the Oscars. Wouldn't have that been grand? That would have been great. I thought that would have been a really great sentiment towards the stunts. And then just, you know, for something that people have been asking for a while, and don't get me wrong, people have probably been asking for casting, and casting should get recognized. But people like myself and people that have been wanting this for a while, they've been asking for it. And just to shut us up, I guess, you know, just add the stunts category. And I just thought it was a great, what a platform as well to announce that that category is going to be part of the Oscars. But no, it was just a thank you. Nice. But I just think it was an opportunity to do something much, much more impactful. So that's my opinion on that. Other than that, they were great. I love Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. They were great. Moving on to cinematography, and this went to Hoyt van Hoytema for Oppenheimer. And I think I had that one. Yes, I did. Had that one on the ballot. And yeah, well-deserved. He had a great speech about celluloid being important, that more filmmakers should use it. He said it's... did he say it was easier? I think he said it was easier. And yeah, we should employ it more in our movies. It makes them look better as well. And don't get me wrong. Yes, I love the look of film. I would love to shoot on film. And, you know, I love what 35mm looks like, 70mm looks like, celluloid, as he says, looks like. But it's expensive, you know, especially, you know, working with independent film. Like, it is expensive to shoot on film more so than it is to shoot in digital. So maybe one day, Hoyt, but probably not today. So yeah, that went to Hoyt van Hoytema. That was great. And I loved his sneakers. then was Live Action Short. This was presented for by Issa Rae and Rami Yusuf. And this went to Wes Anderson's The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Yeah, it was the best short there. And sad that Wes is not there, but apparently he was shooting his new film. So, you know, the man's got to have important stuff to do. So yeah. Then we went to sound, and this was another upset for me because I didn't have it on the ballot at all. I really thought this was going to go to Oppenheimer, but it went to the film that deserved it. And that's always great when it goes to the film that deserves it, that really deserves it. Because when I heard that the words, you know, the zone of interest, I cheered. I actively got out of my seat and I cheered hard. Like, yes. So, so happy for the team behind the Zone of Interest for getting best sound, because that is the best part of the film. That is the film. It is a character in itself. The sound design and the soundscape. That is the film. That is the Zone of Interest. And for some reason, I just really thought Oppenheimer was the front runner. I thought it was going to get it. I thought Oppenheimer was going to sweep all technical. And look, it swept most of technical, but yeah, I was really astounded and so happy to see Zone of Interest get sound. So happy to see Zone of Interest get sound. Guys, if you haven't heard Zone of Interest, go and listen to it. I mean, see it as well, but really, like, listen to it. It's such beautiful fucking sound design. I've never heard a soundscape like that in a film ever. And a film that really just puts you in that zone. Get it? Fuck. That was not planned. Yeah. Wow. I just want to say, when they'll do the nominees for this one as well, again, another creative choice. Instead of showing playing any music or a score that was in the film, they just played the sound design. And like, it was people grunting or like noise and sound effects that they had to put in there. It was just the sound design. I thought it was a great way of showing that. That was great. Another great creative choice that they made. Who produced this? Yeah. So, that was sound. Then it went to music, and, the score went to Ludwig Göransson for Oppenheimer, which is on the ballot as well. And I always thought he was going to get it. That's a terrific score. It's a great score. My personal pick was Robbie Robertson, because that was my favorite score from last year. It would have been a nice posthumous award as well to give him. But also, it's a great fucking score. It should have done well. But what else I'd also put in here as well is fucking Mika Levi's score for Zone of Interest. I mean, I'm a little late saying this, but shit, that's also, like, you know, when we talk about the sound design, the score from Mika Levi in Zone of Interest is incredible. So good. Yeah, that's another part of the film that is the most effective part of it, is that score. Yeah, this went to Ludwig Göransson. Look, great score. I can't, most of these awards, most of these wins that we got, I couldn't disagree with these. I was happy, I was pretty much happy with most of these winning. Like, it was a very, like, I don't know, it was just a very, because you could, I guess it was much controversy, you could say, I guess, you know. It just went without a hitch. It was a very smooth night, and I think they've kind of landed on their feet after the, you know, the fucking craziness that was the pandemic, and then that awful year with the mishap with you know, bringing up Chadwick Boseman, and then Anthony Hopkins winning for The Father, not discounting the work at all, but yeah, just how those ones came together, and then the one after. I think the Oscars is kind of not back in full steam, but I think if they can stick to this kind of this bit of I don't even know what to say, like this form, I guess, there you go, this form, then they can be back to form. I'm a writer. Anyway, then we went to actor in a leading role, and this went to Cillian Murphy. Great to see him up there. Loved his speech. I would have loved Paul to get it as well. Paul Giamatti to get it as well, because I just feel like that man is so deserving of that award as well. But I also felt that Cillian Murphy was so deserving of that award as well. And I was very happy to see him up there. He has been shoo-in for this one for a long time. And what a great role to get it for, because I think this is one of his, if not his best performance that he has ever put to screen. And absolutely loved the shot of him shaking all the actors' hands. I thought it was a great tracking shot. Who shot that? Where'd you get your lessons? I thought that was great how he captured all that. It was really felt really rhythmic, and then the camera tracks back to him when it comes to the audience. Who fucking set that up? Because that was smooth as shit. And especially ending on Nick Cage, bang, like perfect. And then we went to directing, and this was went to Christopher Nolan himself. He is, yeah, long deserving of this award. It was great to see him win. I absolutely loved his speech. I loved his words of saying that now he gets to be a part of history, or thank you for including me in it, or something along those lines. And yeah, because he's so right. He's always been a celebrant of cinema and going to the movies and making movies that are made to be seen in the cinema. And him getting recognized and winning for directing, yeah, now he is a part of history. So it was very poignant, not to use that word again, but very poignant for him to win. I think he was the right person to win that award. So love to see it. Then we went to actress in a leading role, and some people could say that this was the upset of the night. Certainly wasn't what I was expecting, but I'm not mad about it. And there's a lot of people that are already up in arms about it, saying like, what the fuck, Emma shouldn't have won, blah, blah. Look, this was the one I was actually most worried about. And in terms of saying worried, you know, saying like thinking this could go to either Gladstone or Stone. It could go to Gladstone or Stone. It could. It could be either one of them. My personal favorite was Lily Gladstone. I thought she was the pick. But I also really loved Emma Stone's performance in Poor Things. I think it's her best performance she's ever given on the screen. And she is the movie. She is Bella Baxter. She is the fucking movie. More so than her performance as Mia in La La Land. So this was also the award that she deserved. The role, sorry, that she deserved the award for. So I'm not mad at all that Emma won. She was herself was completely shocked. Because we all, yeah, I think we all thought it was going to go to Lily Gladstone. But went to Emma. And yeah, she had a great speech. I feel you, Emma. I also get anxiety as well. yeah, so I don't know. It was a bit of an upset because it was unexpected, but happy upset again. Another happy upset. I was just like, yep, I'm okay with that. She deserves that fucking win. She deserves that win. So I'm not mad about that at all. And look, that just puts Lily on the map more, you know? People are going to see that now. Because the thing about the Oscars is, like, it's just an honor to be nominated. It really is just an honor to be nominated. Because you either come out the underdog or the runner-up or whatever, or and people say, well, that person should have won. Okay, I'm going to check out more of that person's work. And that person could also get more opportunities in the future in the industry. So this is why I say the Oscars, I think I said this like last year or the year before, that the Oscars actually do matter. They're not this pointless ceremony. Yes, they are a bit of a vanity fair. I just realized what I did, and you know, anyway. But they're also important in recognizing and honoring film and the films that do deserve these wins, because it gives them recognition. It gives them more notice, for people to, you know, pay more notice to them. People watch the Oscars. They go to seek these movies out because they're like, okay, what's the best picture winner? Oh, it's Parasite? Oh, I better watch that. Oh, it's Everything Everywhere All at Once? I better watch that. Oh, it's Oppenheimer? Well, you probably did watch Oppenheimer, but sometimes it is those, like, those underdogs that, like, that come out and they take it, and then it's like, people are like, what is this movie? Okay, it won Best Picture. Like, I have to see it, I guess, now. Or I want to check it out if it won Best Picture. When it comes to short films, like, this is how people get to make more short films, because they are Oscar nominated. So the Oscars are important. They are important. And, they are something as a filmmaker myself, they are, something that I'm always going to be striving for. I'm not going to be making movies just to be nominated for Oscars, but, you know, to be nominated is going to be huge. It'd be fucking huge. And to be there, that's enough, you know? It's good to win, but it's enough to be nominated. And I think that works for Lily Gladstone's favor, because now people are going to look at her and they're going to say, I want to check her out in more things. Let's give her more roles, because she is going to get one day, because she is a fantastic actor and she is going to get one day. It might not have been for Killers of the Flower Moon, but very soon Lily Gladstone is going to get an award, because she fucking rightly deserves it when it comes. Once we got that done, we got to the big one. And we got to the one that people were like, okay, this could go, maybe go to Killers, you know, maybe go to Killers. But the sweep was too obvious, man. It was coming in hot. Nolan gets directing. It gets some of the other awards as well. And it happened. Oppenheimer was named Best Picture. Emma Thomas goes up, has her time up there, has her speech. Nolan's longtime producing partner. And she gets to say some lovely stuff as well. Yeah. Oppenheimer, I think, look, I know my pick was Killers of the Flower Moon, but I'm also not mad about Oppenheimer winning. You know, it deserves to be up there. It deserves to be the Best Picture winner. It made a lot of money. It brought a lot of people to the theater last year. You know, you could go on a record and say it did save cinemas in 2023. Like, I mean, I know Barbie and Oppenheimer did that, but, you know, it's a 3-hour epic that people actually trekked their asses to the theater to actually watch, you know? People actually watched it, and then they watched it again. Some people watched it again. And then again. And yes, it's an adaptation from the American Prometheus, but again, it's the way that Christopher Nolan makes it. It's the way that he makes it. It's such a singular vision that he sticks to. And I think is one of his, if not his best film that he has made. Because it's the culmination of everything is put together. And I thought Killian said the message as well for Oppenheimer. You can love it or hate it or disagree or agree with what Oppenheimer did. But shout out the Peacemakers, Oppenheimer is that, you know, as well. You know, he did create the atomic bomb, but, you know, he's a very, very complicated person. And, you know, I think he had good intentions, but also he was used and, I guess, manipulated from powers that be that don't care about much about that, and just cared about being the first to do something, to get something done. Anyway, that was a fucking weird tangent, but point is, Oppenheimer did deserve Best Picture. It did. It is one of the best movies from last year, and I'm glad to look at that in a way of saying yes, that is Best Picture 2023. So yeah, that's pretty much it. My only one note that I want to make is, because Gladstone did not get actress, Kills the Flower Moon did not get any nominations, which I thought was baffling. I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was going to go to Lily. But yeah, it's just insane that I think it was nominated 10 times and it did not get a single thing. Single thing. And that was one of my favorite movies from last year. I'm sure it's going to be talked about even more after this ceremony. I'm sure it's going to get, you know, a lot more eyes on it, a lot more notice. And they might even re-release it. Who knows? But, yeah, I think that will make it more important, because people will be thinking about, like I said with Lily Gladstone, people thinking about, like, okay, well, but why didn't this win? Like, I can check this out. I can watch this movie, but and why didn't this win? People are saying that this movie should have won, but okay, yeah. And they start agreeing with them. Yeah, it should have won. again, not discounting Oppenheimer, like I said, not discounting Oppenheimer. I'm just saying that it was strange. It was really strange that Killers of the Flower Moon did not get anything. Did not get one single thing. I just thought that was, I don't know, something I took away from the ceremony. Not like in a sour way, but I just something I took away. I was just like, I can't believe that. 10 nominations, nothing. God. That's crazy. That is crazy. That movie gets nothing. Anyway, that was the 2024 Oscars. Like I said, pretty good ceremony. Decent, like I said. One of the best ones I've had in years. I liked all the choices that they made. I liked all the new stuff they brought in. The speeches were great. The comedy bits were hit and miss, 50-50. The last thing I want to talk about was John Mulaney. Let's just have that man host next year, because his way of still celebrating sound, but then talking about and giving full-on spoilers to Field of Dreams, I thought was really, 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 really funny. But when's he hosting? He should definitely host next year. Or Messi, get the dog to host. I think the dog should host from Anatomy of Fall. I think the dog should host. That's just me. That's my thoughts. Anyway, that's the 2024 Oscars. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I promise you I will be back with an actual full-on return to form episode. I have recorded it. It's on Dune Part 2 and some anime that I've been watching. And like I said, the IMAX experience I had with Dune, that will be coming out this week. But I just want to get this out there so we can have this, you know, this can all be behind us this Oscar season. Well, not completely behind me, because I've still got to bring out my best of list video. Hopefully going to be doing that soon. But yeah, that's it for the Oscars. That's it for these movies. Until the next one, I'm pretty sure Dune Part 2 is going to be nominated for a lot of fucking awards next year. So, like a lot of awards. So, to Dune Part 2, Best Picture. It's going to sweep technical, man. It's going to sweep technical. Just like the first one did. Anyway, I'm signing off. I've got to go to bed. I've got fucking work in the morning. So, thanks for listening. I'm going to get this out as quick as possible so you can get my thoughts on everything. And like I said, I will be back soon with an actual regular fucking podcast. Until then, you have a great week. Stay safe. And I'll talk to you next time.